This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo, episode 37. Coming up on today's show, Paul Manafort off to Rikers, and whatever happened to the ACLU. All that and more here on Still Standing.
No talking points, no spin. It's politics you can't put down. This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo.
Hello, and welcome to Still Standing with Michael Caputo. I'm Michael. I appreciate you taking the time to listen in to Still Standing. I do this every week toward the end of the week, watching what the news stories are in politics and give you a little bit of a piece of my mind. Thursdays, Fridays. This week, I was actually on the road traveling. I was in Washington. I was in studio with Tucker Carlson on Tuesday night, and then went down to Puerto Rico for business, doing more and more work down there, traveling down there quite a bit. It's a long flight, actually, from Buffalo, New York. You're not going to get there direct from Buffalo, and you know, then you got to lay over in some place like JFK or even I've laid over in DCA. And, you know, basically you're talking about a 10-hour day, 11-hour day of traveling to get from Buffalo to San Juan. That takes a lot out of an old guy, you know, with bad knees. I used to travel a lot. I'm trying to travel less, but my work in Puerto Rico requires travel, and I enjoy the work. So I'll talk about that some other time. I think I've got something I'm cooking up my work in Puerto Rico, which might be of interest in the months ahead. So I did Tucker Carlson Tuesday night, and I've been kind of focused this week, at least in my consumption of news, since I haven't been on TV due to the fact that I'm in San Juan. You know, San Juan's funny. I got down there when I was on Tucker Tuesday night. I went to San Juan first thing in the morning on Wednesday. Tried to get CNN tried to book me for Anderson Cooper, I guess it was, or something. And there's just a real dearth of studios down there. I would imagine it seems odd to me, and so many things about like that about San Juan, about Puerto Rico, that you would imagine. I mean, it's America, you know, and there's so much TV going on down there, so much TV news out of there, that you'd figure there'd at least be a studio. They're not all doing that, you know, all those things with, you know, with trucks, and you know, but there's just really nothing down there. Anyway, so I'm just watching the news and consuming the news and being in Puerto Rico. I'm not and working. I'm not watching Fox News like I do in my office, or CNN, or, you know, really even checking the Twitters all that much. And of course, when I was checking, into Paul Manafort's imminent transfer to Rikers. And it upsets me to watch this kind of abuse of our legal system. It really does. And we don't have a justice system with any fairness. As I said on Tucker, we don't have a justice system. It's a just us system. We have one tier with people like Hillary Clinton and, you know, Barack Obama, Susan Rice, you know, all the, you know, the rest of the cast of characters, you know, Brennan, Clapper, you know, Jussie Smollett, right? And then on the second tier, there's me and you and Paul Manafort and others, people who are just either targeted by the system or unfortunate enough to be forgotten by the system, which is more like you and me. But once you get in the crosshairs of what I consider to be now a corrupt justice system, morally and perhaps criminally corrupt justice system, you see that unleashed on someone, you know, it makes you think a lot about, you know, for example, you know, we know that Cy Vance, the district attorney in New York City, notorious character. I've been watching him for years. I watched as he just absolutely tore apart a friend of mine in a criminal prosecution, also political, also a Republican. Cy Vance, I don't even know what to think of the guy now that he's trying to send Paul to the deepest hole in the most terrible prison in the United States of America. I don't know what motivates a man to do that, because they say, oh, he shouldn't be treated differently, but gangbangers and murderers and drug kingpins aren't transferred from a federal holding center to another jurisdiction until right before their trial. And right now we don't know when Paul Manafort's trial even is. It could be 9, 10, 12 months ahead. I don't know, on the New York charges. And of course, these New York charges are duplicates of the federal charges that Paul Manafort has faced, which brings up the whole idea of double jeopardy, no doubt. I mean, the United States Constitution is pretty explicit about this, and it really does rankle me when I see people try and pick up on something, a concept and a principle that's been fully and completely discussed and explained by our founders. And to me, Manafort's attorneys could challenge the DA Vance's indictment on double jeopardy, but you know, these are the same charges that he went on trial for in Virginia. But what's interesting and horrific, actually, is that New York lawmakers just recently changed the state's double jeopardy law. This is like 2 weeks ago. And we call it the Paul Manafort law, the Manafort law. Well, the Democrats control the Assembly, the Senate, and, of course, the governorship under Andrew Cuomo. And then we're completely controlled by progressives in New York State. We went from dark blue to colorless void of blackness, where there's no red in sight in New York. They can pass whatever they want and do whatever they want. So they passed the Manafort bill, which basically makes it legal for New York State to commit double jeopardy, to violate the constitutional rights of someone if they were pardoned after working for a president. Working in the White House at a PAC or at a nonprofit, anything affiliated with the President of the United States, that drops your constitutional protections against double jeopardy in New York State. It's crazy, right? You know, relocating Paul Manafort with not even relocating him to Rikers in the hold, they're promising they're going to put him in solitary confinement because it's just too dangerous. He's got no trial in sight. That's just the most high-handed politically commissioned prosecution I've ever seen. It's not justice. It's just us. It's just them. And it's us against them in a lot of ways. I find it very, very hard to believe, as we watch these things go down, that someone can actually stand by, a principled person can stand by and watch as things are fundamentally changed in this justice system to accommodate a hatred, a deep-seated hatred of the President of the United States. No doubt. And then they weaponize things. Here in New York, politics is always a crime scene in New York, always. You know, we've had all of our leaders put in jail. Shoot, two of the last three attorneys general were put in jail. One were fired, lost their jobs. But Spitzer, who was later happened when he was governor, but he resigned. But, I mean, we've had some real, real tools as attorneys general. AG, Eric Schneiderman, had to quit because of his abuse of women. I mean, we've had some real, real winners in our prosecutors' offices. It's, right now we have this Tish James, who is a New York State attorney general. She's very political, a soldier of the Democratic machine. And then we also have Cy Vance, as I mentioned, the New York City DA. He's very political and treacherous. So is Tish James. Political and treacherous. It's a very dangerous combination, and it's very common in New York State politics, very common among the Democrats. Political and treacherous. Not only do you view things with a political mindset and you want to pursue political goals, you're also treacherous, which means you'll do bad things to achieve your aims. Like Tish James, who is now trying to prosecute, you know, dropping charges or laying charges on and trying to investigate Donald Trump, trying to get at his tax records, which the New York State Assembly passed a law. We call it the Trump Tax Return Law. The New York State will give a federal investigation a copy of his tax returns if they're asked to. Passed the law, the Trump law, goes like a nice bookend with the Manafort law. It's an amazing place to live in New York. It's a place where everyone is in peril if you don't agree with the progressive line. Certainly, the president is in real peril here, and so is Manafort, of course. If he goes into the hole in Rikers, I know Paul very well. I mean, well enough. He was a bold and robust man in good health for his lifetime. But when this came down on him, prosecution of what are real crimes, right? But this over-the-top prosecution, the over-the-top pursuit, the over-the-top incarceration, the over-the-top torture to try to squeeze him to do something, and I don't quite know what, because he knows nothing about Donald Trump. All of this stuff, they're financial crimes, but if somebody, one of these hedge funders or somebody from Goldman Sachs did this stuff, they wouldn't have been hauled out of their bed at gunpoint with his wife and in a lingerie and her night clothes, right? No Democrat hedge funder out of Goldman Sachs would be thrown in the hole in Rikers for double jeopardy charges that violate his constitutional rights. You know, his attorneys, like I said, can challenge that on, you know, this double jeopardy stuff. They can challenge it on constitutional grounds. But at the same time, you know, these are just tools to try to get Paul Manafort to do something, and I don't, or which is more common and more commonly believed, and I believe also quite true, that these people, Vance, James, Schiff, you know, Swalwell, you know, all the bad cops out of the FBI have already been fired, who are probably going to be brought up on charges. All of these people are just so crazed over Donald Trump as president of the United States that they will do anything. Listen, here's the thing that we all need to continue to understand. We must never take our eye off this, all right? Never. In my opinion, they believe that they're right. They have this perverse sense of responsibility for the truth. They believe so deeply in the fact that Donald Trump should not be president that they're willing to bend and even break the law to try and stop him. Nobody among these conspirators ever really thought that there was Russian collusion unless they were absolutely nut jobs. The smart ones among these conspirators knew exactly what was going down. They were orchestrating it, working with Glenn Simpson and the others, right? It's become a religion now among some. You know, the conspirators, they believe, you know, we are living under the reign of a criminal president, and we have to protect ourselves from this man in any way we can. You know, break the law, whatever it takes. And we'll just worry about the fallout when he's gone. He'll be gone. It's become a religion. And now, of course, recently blessed by Bishop Robert Mueller, Bishop Bob, with his press conference. This faith, this absurd belief that only they knew best, is a faith that most humans don't have. It's something that blinds them to the truth and to what is good and what is right. This faith moved them, and as in the final conflict over this, only a greater faith is going to overcome them. I think it's important for all of us to understand that they've done this with faith. This has become a religion. This, you know, resistance and anti-Trumpism and never-Trumpism has become something, a faith that they hold in their hearts, nigh on a religion. And this depth and height and breadth of faith that move them to do this, we cannot defeat it unless we have the breadth and height and depth of faith equivalent or more. Only greater faith is really going to overcome them. You know? We're going to need great men, heroes, to sort this out properly. So the real question is, are President Trump, Attorney General Barr, and prosecutor, U.S. Attorney John Durham, are they great men? That's the question each of us must ask ourselves. Remember that this whole hoax was built on a perverse faith. Understand that we will need equal or greater faith to overcome them. And in the end, we will need great men to sort this out properly. Still standing.
Please remain standing. We'll be right back.
Hi, welcome back to Still Standing with Michael Caputo. I'm Michael, and you can find Still Standing weekly, like 30, 40 minutes of commentary each week, toward the end of the week. A couple of guests now and then, if I can find somebody worth your time. And you can find it at stillstandingpodcast.com. I enjoy doing this. It's a lot of fun. Myself and my producer, Sean Dwyer, we enjoy it. It's a labor of love. We do enjoy and appreciate the support of many people who we consider our executive producers here at stillstandingpodcast.com. If you contribute to keeping this thing going, we consider you someone who is an originator of this entire program, of the content that we're producing. And if it goes on into perpetuity, you'll be an original executive producer, some like John Seifert, my friend Henry Wotazek, Susan Havey, Thomas Fulton, who's a great supporter. I really appreciate it, Tom. Sonia Carlin is an executive producer. Darcy Swenson, George Noon, and Daniel Markey. Stephen Flaminio. Stephen, how you doing? We see each other on social media. Gary Stokes, Samantha Lynn. Thanks, Samantha Lynn. Brian Pizdersky, Susan Stevens, Jack Bromwich, Jordan Gostomsky, Patty Freeling, Bill Grant, Greg Mumbach, my old pal, Mark Berry. Hi, Mark. I hope you're doing well. And Julie Rachel. Thank you both, Julie and Rachel, who are executive producers and first name only. I don't blame you. This world has gone crazy, gone absolutely crazy with the political partisanship. And, you know, my family's gotten 59 death threats during the Russia hoax. 59 death threats. Some of them quite intimidating. My wife once got a piece of a sniper rifle in the mail. That was very upsetting for her. I think it'd be very upsetting for anybody. But anyway, I don't want to talk about that stuff. Things are moving forward with our family and other families that were caught up in this. There are about 40 families. You have witnesses, subjects, and targets. Witnesses, people like myself, who the investigators thought might have information that they needed in order to get closer to subjects and targets. Subjects are people that the prosecutors believe could be targets and certainly are close to the nexus of what they're investigating. But most importantly, probably have information about people they know and who are their targets. People like Paul Manafort and Rick Gates and Roger Stone and George Papadopoulos and for a long time, Carter Page. And then when they realized that Carter Page, for example, was not committing any crimes, he just became a subject because as a subject, they were looking at him to provide information that they thought would uncover others' culpability, others' involvement in Russian collusion. And they're the witnesses like me, you know, and 40 other families, formerly 40 other people who were original Trumpers, people who go way back with the president. I go back to 88, but I, you know, worked with them a lot on politics in the couple of years leading up his 2015 declaration for the presidency and then through the campaign, there are a lot of us coming out of this after it's all over, witnesses, original Trumpers who are now just getting on with their lives. And our family is too. It's been a terrible 2 years. And of course we find out that they were pursuing us, unmasking us and spying upon us. 3 years ago. So this has been quite a long time. First, they took away my constitutional rights, ignored my constitutional rights, and then tried to manipulate the Constitution and our legal system in order to entrap me and so many other people. But those of us who are just witnesses, Carter Page, I think, is actually coming out of the wilderness himself. I'm hoping he's getting out more and enjoying more of life. But, you can imagine being Carter Page. If you're out in public, you could get attacked. Roger Stone was verbally assaulted in a restaurant in Washington. That's become a whole thing. Did it happen? Did it not happen? I can tell you Roger Stone is attacked out in public all the time. While families like mine are trying to recover, Roger Stone's is in hell. I don't mean her purgatory. I mean in the fires of hell. And that's because of the people who are willing to do this to people. It's because of folks in the rogue FBI, many of whom are gone now, but they were forsworn to stop Donald Trump by any means necessary and bent and broke laws to do it. We're going to find all that out. I think most of us understand that's what's next. But they have these, those folks, like simply, let's say, for example, look at Mueller, look at Rosenstein, probably look at all of the Obama team on the legal side of things, what they could do and how they could weaponize the laws in order to mop up the president and his men, even if there was no collusion and they knew there was none. They had this kind of limitless view of obstruction. Right. They knew that if they could not find, and they would not find, Russian collusion, that they would tempt Roger Stone, Donald Trump, whoever, into obstruction or into crimes that they can prosecute. And what bothers me is you can imagine, the people, Mueller, Strzok, Page, all the Orr, the Simpson, all these folks. Fusion FBI, the Senate investigators that were leaking to the media and sleeping with the media. It's a sick progressive fascination, if you ask me. But they have all, among other things, embraced this limitless view of obstruction that they're applying to, to the president now, trying to move him toward impeachment. And as I've said for 6 months, impeachment is a metaphysical certitude. This limitless view of obstruction is embraced by one side. But what's really curious to me, and I've talked to my clients, I represent law firms, and I have, of course, many lawyers around me now because of this bogus investigations and the Russia hoax commissioned by the Hillary Clinton campaign. These attorneys tell me that they're shocked indeed by typical organizations and individuals who are defenders of the rights of the accused, the social justice organizations, the civil liberties organizations, the ones who would usually come out and even defend the rights of someone who's not just accused, but also guilty, they have also embraced this limitless view of obstruction, which is shocking to me. It's shocking to me. This, they've written a whole new, more aggressive rule book, and these usual voices who champion the Constitution over prosecutors, they've fallen completely silent. Completely silent. They've always held themselves out as principled people. That's why they can defend criminals' rights, because criminals do still have rights. We're on principle doing these things at the ACLU, right? But because it's fallen, it's because it's Donald Trump, ACLU, and all the others, they've completely fallen silent. They've embraced this limitless view of obstruction. The aggressive rule book is now okay with them. And you understand, that doesn't just move the needle for Donald Trump. that moves the needle for everyone. Because if it's okay with Donald Trump, you understand that the standards of our rule of law in this nation have been completely destroyed. So if they will do it to the president of the United States, they will do it to you. Let me let you know that if they do this with the president of the United States, they are going to do it to you. They are certainly going to do it to someone you know. They've done it to people that I know. It's amazing. And as you watch them try to walk up to obstruction, you know, Chairman Nadler and others, they have always been going to obstruct. And this week, you know, there's stories about how Nadler is actually starting to carve out all the tools necessary to obstruct. These, you know, Mueller's staff, the Nadler types, these progressive activists, and I say that about the Mueller team too, 13 of them were closely aligned with Hillary Clinton and her campaigns or her foundations. They have these conceptions of executive power and obstruction that are very, very different from Attorney General William Barr's opinion. And most conservative legal analysts, most conservative lawyers I know who subscribe to, let's say, Justice Scalia views would agree with Barr and therefore would agree with me when I tell you that these progressive activists have conceptions of executive power and obstruction that are very, very different, questionable, and winnable in the case in the court of law. Winnable. But it doesn't matter when I tell you that this limitless view of obstruction is moving the bar, moving the goalposts, and now we're all in danger of being held to the same account. I mean that. I mean that. I mean, Barr agreeers, you know, Justice Scalia, you know, supporters others who believe in the conservative viewpoint of the rule of law. It doesn't matter that we're out there fighting because right now we are overwhelmed. And the people like Mueller's staff, if we don't have heroes, strong men and women, heroes, we won't defeat them. We won't get past them. And I think we all need to understand that this is a struggle. It's a much bigger struggle, you know, a much bigger struggle than just Trump. It is. I mean, everybody always says that, you know, when your man's in trouble, right? I don't think the president is in trouble, but they're doing everything they can. They're pulling out all the stops. They're using every tool in the Department of Justice and FBI and elsewhere, CIA, NSA, in order to stop the Trump presidency. And they failed. You know, what is it I read the other day online? The struggle of man against power is the struggle of memory against forgetting. You understand what that means, right? What we are struggling with now, we've struggled with before in the 70s, or the CIA, the NSA, the IRS, the FBI were all investigated by the Senate Church Committee, the House Pike Committee, and the administration's Eisenhower Commission. There was significant reform after this. The reform that stuck around in law, in code, and in legend. If you joined the CIA in the 1980s, old timers of the CIA would hear you talking in the lunchroom. You started talking about politics. They'd say, shh, 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 what are you talking about? Listen, if you want a career here, if you want to be around for a while, you don't even talk politics. We lost hundreds of officers in the purge after the Church Committee. Now, the Church Committee didn't end all that well, and it didn't accomplish everything it should have. But we need something of that level of aggression, level of oversight. And unfortunately, we also this week hear from Senator Lindsey Graham that he has no interest in that. But we're going to need real heroes, great men and women, real heroes. Right now we know that facts aren't hanging together with the official explanations, according to Attorney General William Barr. That's one of the most chilling things I've heard him say in the last couple of weeks. He said, the facts, when it was at the CBS This Morning interview, the facts aren't hanging together with official explanations, quote unquote. That is a, when he said that, the temperature in William Brennan's, I'm sorry, yes, and John Brennan in Clapper's in Comey's houses, the temperature dropped like 40 degrees. It got cold. Facts aren't hanging together with official explanations. I need to know more. That's our attorney general. Like I said, you know, hubris, a maniacal kind of faith in their own perverse moral code of what is right and wrong. That drove these people to do this. They believed it was their duty. Like I said, their faith moved them. It's a religion. If you ask me what I want to see right now, we're waiting for some D-class stuff to start moving. We're supposed to be on the cusp of this. The investigators. I've been hearing this for quite some time. I'm tired of waiting. Declassify. Let us know what Obama staffer leaked the Flynn Kislyak telephone call to the Washington Post in December of 2016. Give me that. We need to know that. That is not a sources and methods problem. Every ambassador knows, and Kislyak has said, that he knew that he was being listened to. And certainly General Flynn should have known that that telephone call was tapped, as they say, as the president said, as well. Kislyak's not going to say, oh, they found my conversation with Flynn. I wonder how they did that. Now, suddenly we're going to discover some crazy method of how they know how they did that. The NSA, come on. No sources and methods complaint. Just give it to us. Which Obama White House staffer leaked the Flynn Kislyak telephone call to the Washington Post? Give me that. If you can't give me the Church Committee, the Pike Committee, and the Eisenhower Commission, give me that. That's one of the seminal crimes. Certainly. That is a felony. Whoever did that must be prosecuted. Unfortunately, they don't have much of an appetite for prosecution. And then, of course, I want all communications, texts, emails, love notes, everything between Brennan and Comey in December of 2016. Trey Gowdy said that on television. I agree. All communications between Brennan and Comey in December of 2016. We know now that Comey, Brennan, and Clapper, you know, these guys were all conspiring. Brennan and Comey are now throwing each other under the bus, and I think that's where you're going to see the collapse of the narrative between Brennan and Comey. But I want to see all their communications, like Gowdy said. All of them, between Brennan and Comey, December 2016. I want to see more. I want to see before that. But what went down in December 2016 is really important. I believe. I agree with what Gowdy said. Anyway, that's where my head's at. Summer has started. School is over for my 17-year-old. School is ending for my 6-year-old. My 4-year-old will turn 5 very soon, getting ready for some kind of fairy princess and birthday party. I don't know what it's going to be. Actually, I heard she wants to do like some kind of pop star themed at the dance studio, a pop star themed party. That should be funny. Yeah, that's what I'm up to. A pop star themed birthday party at the local dance studio. And I got to tell you something. If you're listening to me from the Senate, from a staff office in the House, from the White House, from a governor's office out west, I hope you're having a good life. But I would not want to be anywhere else but at this dance studio for this pop star themed birthday party for my little 5-year-old Leah. I'd much rather be doing that than any of this. It's time for me to walk the earth like Kane in Kung Fu again. I've gotten way too deep into this stuff. Being dragged into this investigation has changed everything for me and my family and my poor girls. I'm sorry, so sorry to my wife. Somehow or another, we got to find our peaceful, you know, our way toward peace. I don't think it's going to Washington and joining the administration or something like that. I'll write a book. Anyway, Michael Caputo for Still Standing. Once again, that's stillstandingpodcast.com. Thanks a lot for listening in this week. I'll get to you again next week. Probably even do a video over the weekend. Haven't done one of those in a little while. At stillstandingpodcast.com.